God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
Good, thanks, Brent. I love daylight saving, so it's a good part of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've got to be honest. I don't mind daylight saving, but I just wish it didn't go for 6 months. I don't mind it now, but when you're getting up at the end of daylight saving at 7 a.m. and it's pitch black, I just wish they'd ended at the end of summer.
Well, that's true, but at the beginning, at springtime, I think it's fantastic, and the sun coming up at 5:15 has never been much fun the last couple of days.
That is true. Very true. Okay. Mate, let's start with the protesters. As many as 15,000 people are expected to march through the Sydney CBD today. Police obviously have issued a warning that any violence in the streets is not going to be tolerated. Yesterday, we found out that more than 1,000 police are going to be on standby today and tomorrow after New South Wales Police and organisers of the Palestine Action Group made an 11th-hour deal in the Supreme Court, including a revised route avoiding Sydney's Great Synagogue. It's costing the taxpayers, they say, $2 million for this to happen. But let's hope that the protests go ahead, the march goes ahead, and we don't see violence in our streets, Mark.
Well, I don't think the protest march should have been approved. The police surrendered at the court action on Thursday when initially Chris Minns had said this protest is inappropriate at the anniversary of the 7 October terrorist attack on Israel by Hamas, a registered terrorist organisation, because it raises the question, Brent, what are they protesting against? What's their problem? Why would they mark the 7th of October, other than to say what, that not enough Israelis were killed? I mean, did anyone authorise a protest march about September 11 on the anniversaries of that? These should be commemorations of the people who died, innocent people who died, including all those kids at the music festival who were chopped down by terrorist action. So I think it's a very bad sign for Australia, a very bad sign for Sydney, that people are protesting about this and bringing all that trouble, conflict and violence from the Middle East into our country. I mean, if you've come here from the Middle East, you've pretty well won the lottery of life, and you should leave all those troubles behind and not replicate them here in Australia. But that, unfortunately, will be the nature of the protest today. Chris Minns said it shouldn't happen, but he's so weak, and it turns out the police leadership is so weak as to not to enforce the law. I mean, the law should come first. And if the police think that, oh, they'd turn up anyway and we're going to have to arrest them, well, that's the job of the police.
It is. Unfortunately, I see the numbers of 15,000 people expected to march through the streets of Sydney today. I wonder how many of those are just professional people that turn up to these protests and could not care less about what they are protesting about. They're just there.
You look at the flags that are waved, and we've had Hezbollah flags on the streets of Sydney and Melbourne, which in itself is a disgrace, and at least one person's been arrested for it. You look at the flags today, and they're not professional protesters, they're Palestinian activists who seemingly want to mark the 7th of October, not with a commemoration, not with a memorial, not with the sadness of how many innocent people died, but with further protest-type aggression about Israel. So I just think that's wrong. It's the wrong time of the year. It's the wrong day in which to do it. Tomorrow's even worse. I mean, there's supposed to be a protest at one of the Sydney mosques tomorrow where, again, thousands will turn up. So it's not just today. It's across the long weekend. And Chris Minns, if you can't enforce the law of New South Wales, what are you doing in being the Premier of the state?
Well, I suppose a little bit of blame, though, has to lay surely at the feet of the Prime Minister as well because, you know, he said a lot but didn't do much.
Well, it's not his law to enforce. The Prime Minister doesn't have the anti-protest laws that we've got. Don't forget that protests that block railways and roads can be deemed illegal in New South Wales. That's the law. It's not a federal law. It's a state law. Minns came out beating his chest early in the week to say the protest is inappropriate, completely inappropriate, and I supported those comments 100%. But what's the point of the Premier saying that? The police take action to the Supreme Court of New South Wales, just down from the Parliament on Thursday, and walk away with the Palestinian leadership saying, oh, we've got everything we want.
Mm.
We've got everything we want. They withdrew the action. We've got everything we want. So, you know, good luck if you think these are going to be peaceful, generous, compassionate, Australian-style protests today. They won't be, and they won't be tomorrow either. And as I say, you know, the comparison is September 11. Did we ever protest on behalf of bin Laden on September 11, on the anniversaries? Of course not. It would have been seen as barbaric, un-Australian, and completely horrific. But that's what's going to be happening on the streets of Sydney today and tomorrow.
Do you think if that happens on the streets of Sydney today and tomorrow, i.e. that is violence, do you think that that will go toward, I suppose, laws being changed? Well, laws don't need to be changed, I understand that, Mark, but what I'm getting at is if there is violence, when they have said there will be no violence, do you think that will then mean we won't ever see things like this, the protests for this again, because politicians just simply, and the police, just simply said, OK, we gave you this chance, you blew it, never again?
Well, no, I don't. I think people are too weak. Chris Minns is too weak to enforce the law. It's not a question of needing new laws. The laws are in place. They just need to be enforced. He's been too weak to do that. The police leadership has been too weak to do that. And it's reminiscent of what happened a year ago. Remember, after the October 7 terrorist attack, there was an illegal protest march down to the Opera House, protesting the fact the Israeli flag was going to be displayed on the sails of the Sydney Opera House. And the police did nothing about that protest. Unfortunately, Brent, the police leadership are making a judgment. It's easier to allow an illegal, inappropriate protest to take place than to enforce the law and arrest the people who break the law.
Yeah.
Now, when it gets to the point that for a select group of people who are doing the wrong thing, the police say, oh, it's just too tough to arrest them, well, law and order just goes out the window. We become a lawless state with a police force that's unwilling to enforce the law, and that, for all the taxpayers who fund the police, is a disgrace.
Speaking of police, last week you and I talked about Undiegate with Gareth Ward. Now we're talking about Gingate. I can't believe this story just doesn't go away. We've been talking about Gingate now for weeks and weeks. The New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb, we find out now she hired a private PR firm for media training while she was in the running to be appointed as the state's top cop. And later she gave the firm's bosses two bottles of gin purchased by the taxpayer. I think the bloke, the ex-boss from Qantas, he got a bottle of the gin as well. I would suggest that she's regretting the day she ever decided to come up with these bottles of gin to hand out as a goodwill gestures, Mark.
Yeah, well, there's an old saying in politics, Brent, that the cover-up is worse than the crime. And the alleged crime here, if you could call it that, is pretty trivial. A couple of dozen bottles of gin is not much in the broad sweep of policing in New South Wales, like the first matter we discussed, the protests. But since then, Karen Webb has shown very poor judgment. She should have just said, look, these gin bottles, it's been inappropriate to hand them out. I'll pay for them myself. She's on $700,000 a year and could have just paid back the money for the taxpayer. So you wouldn't have had the initial run of story saying, you know, how bad that the taxpayer has paid for these gin bottles. And since then, though, my colleague in the Upper House, Rod Roberts, has done a fantastic job in pinning down the controversy about a register. There's supposed to be a register that listed who received all the gin bottles. And there's a suggestion, a very strong suggestion, that the register was created after the event. It's a fabricated document. And Rod Roberts, through the powers of the upper House, has asked for the metadata so you can see when on the computers the document was first created. Remarkably, the government and Karen Webb is refusing to hand over to the Upper House that metadata, as they're obliged to do. So, you know, you've got a suspicion there. Well, maybe it was created after the event. And that, I think, would be a sacking offence for the police commissioner. So there's another adage I can give you from politics. When you're in a hole, stop digging.
Yes.
And Karen Webb is digging deeper and deeper about something that started out as trivia and now is a major controversy, not really about gin bottles, but about her credibility.
Are you surprised she still has a job?
I am. The government's sticking with her for reasons. I had a discussion with my colleague this morning saying, well, why would the government be sticking with her? What's going on in the background? You know, sometimes these things are complicated when it comes to the relationship between police and politicians. They are sticking with her. I don't think she was a great appointment in the first place, mainly for the reason she's never had the confidence to front the media. But now with these gin bottles, she's made massive errors of judgment in how to handle the controversy. The easy thing was just to pay back the money in the first instance, and none of these other issues about the register and metadata and the like would ever have arisen. So, she's dug the hole, and she continues to dig deeper, and perhaps it's only a matter of time before the government says enough is enough, let's find a new police commissioner.
This week we saw the vice presidential debate between Vance and Waltz. It felt like a civil and relatively restrained conversation about the issues at the top of the American voters' minds going into the November 5 election. What were your thoughts, Mark?
No, Donald Trump, I suppose, made it a lot more civil. A lot of references to Donald Trump, particularly from Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate. But, yeah, it was interesting. J.D. Vance, you'd have to say, Trump's running mate, is an incredibly effective debater, articulate across the facts, really knew how to make the sound debating points. And Tim Walz, first time I'd ever seen him. And, you know, if anything ever happened to a President Kamala Harris, he becomes the commander-in-chief. He's a guy that runs on passion. There was the suggestion he was sort of loopy left and reckless and incompetent. I thought he did okay in the debate. Vance won it. But first look at Tim Walz, you'd say he's a very passionate, interesting guy. You know, he sort of had a weird statement at one point that he'd become friends with school shooters. And I think he was so excited he forgot to say, I've become friends with the victims, the remaining victims of school shooters. So he messed up some of his lines, but I think he did okay in general, whereas J.D. Vance, I think he's a real star of the Republican Party going forward.
Yes, I suppose he probably thought that, did he not? I'm on show, and if something does happen to Donald Trump and he does fall over, or goodness me, he becomes sick and can't continue in that role, J.D. Vance would take over.
Well, not for this election, but he's a young man, J.D. Vance. I think he's in his early 40s, so he'd be thinking about who's the nominee in 2028 when he's in his mid-40s, you know. People do think that way in politics, Brent. Believe it or not, there's a bit of opportunism, but he certainly presented, that was his goal, to be a future nominee for the president for the Republican Party, then yes, he was a star performer during the week, during that debate.
Has Donald Trump returned, or is he returning to Pennsylvania, the venue where he narrowly survived an assassination attempt?
He's there right now.
To
many thousands of people who've gathered, some of those who'd been there previously, that infamous day in Butler. He's back there at the same venue, obviously with a lot better protection and security around him, one would hope, touch wood. So he's gone back there, I think, as an act of courage, as an act of reminding the American people what happened that day, and to rally his supporters 1 month out from the election. So it's getting, you know, it's getting into the final stretch now of the election campaign, and politically it's a good move for him to be back in Butler. And obviously a big moment in American politics to see how it all plays out.
Mark, if you read the polls, and I know there are so many different polls coming out, but most of them are saying the same thing, and that is, gee, it's going to be very, very, very close.
Yeah, it does. The polls look, as they have the last couple of elections involving Trump, close against Hillary Clinton, and Trump got home, close against Biden. And Biden won in a couple of the key states, and it looks the same again. One of the criticisms that's out there is that Kamala Harris is not doing enough. She's sort of avoiding media scrutiny, not doing a lot of events, not doing press conferences, fielding questions. And when Hillary Clinton did that 8 years ago, Trump ran over the top of her, had the momentum and had done all the hard work. Whatever you say about Trump, his age, his views, his outlook, whatever you think of him, he is the hardest working campaigner anyone's ever seen. He basically never stops. And that might be his key advantage in the end to get across the line.
Do you think the comments that have come out in the last 24, 48 hours of his wife re-abortion, because her book is coming out and her comments seem to be the complete opposite of what Donald Trump's approach is, do you think those comments are going to hurt him in any way?
Oh, I think people would generally cut them slack on an issue like that, which is not so much a party political issue, it's a conscience issue about life. People would think, is it that surprising a man and a woman in a marriage would have differing points of view? Probably not. So I don't think it'll hurt a lot. It probably shows that she's an independent woman with her own stance. Trump's view is to decentralise abortion laws in the United States, to leave it to the states, each individual state, rather than the federal government. So, you know, that's sort of a compromise position he's reached over the years. Melania Trump has a different point of view. Will it hurt him electorally? I don't think a great deal, no.
Okay. The US military says it's carried out 15 strikes against targets linked to Iran-aligned Houthi fighters in Yemen on Friday. That was local time. Meanwhile, the president, Joe Biden, he's urged Israel against striking Iran's oil facilities while making a surprise first appearance in the White House briefing room, advising Israel to think about other alternatives. Overnight, of course, Israel carried out a series of airstrikes in southern suburbs of Beirut and another that cut off the main border crossing between Lebanon and Syria. Joe Biden seems to have changed his approach. 48 hours ago, he seemed to be supporting attacking Iran's oil fields or oil facilities. Now that seems to not be the approach.
Well, I suppose the role for the United States is to avoid all-out war in the Middle East, which would be massively destabilising, not just for that region, obviously, but for the world economy. So Biden has got to be pretty careful there. What I'm worried about are the views overnight from the French President Macron, who's called for an arms embargo on Israel. France is supposed to be an Israel ally, but they've called for an arms embargo. Don't sell arms or supply arms to Israel, when obviously Israel's under attack from Hamas, Hezbollah, from rockets coming from Lebanon, rockets coming from Iran. Israel has the right to defend itself, but unfortunately some of its allies are starting to take silly positions like the French. I think the main thing is for the Americans to do as much as they can to avoid all-out war. But that means basically you've got to wipe out the terrorists. I mean, there's no peace in that region as long as terrorism has any foothold. So whether you're talking about the Houthis in Yemen or Hamas in Gaza or Hezbollah in Lebanon, the quicker the Americans help to eliminate them, the better off the region will be.
So true. Let's come back home and talk about the news that was headline reports for a couple of days this week. The government were talking up its economic credentials and the delivery of a second consecutive budget surplus. Jackie Lambie came out and she said it as it is. Nobody gives a stuff about a second consecutive budget surplus. Do you agree with what Jackie Lambie said, Mark?
Well, the Reserve Bank does. The Reserve Bank has said consistently that if budgets were in surplus at federal and state level, they'd have a stronger opportunity to lower interest rates to help with the housing affordability crisis and take the pressure off small business and households. So Jackie Lambie can say that, but how about Jackie Lambie does some basic research for a senator and reads the statements of the Reserve Bank and just considers economic logic? It does matter, and the folly of Jim Chalmers and the federal government is having had two budgets in surplus in a row. They've blown it, and we're now going back into big, big deficit. Deficits similar to those we had in the COVID period. So that's a regressive economic step. It will make it harder to bring down interest rates, and I don't think it's very responsible for a senator like Lambie to be so blasé about important economic facts and something as critical as the interest rate levels in Australia.
I can't let you go this week without talking about the footy, the NRL Grand Final. It's arrived, it's here, it's the Storm, it's Panthers. I dare say you would be supporting the Panthers, Mark.
Yeah, as a Dragon, we still hate the Storm from the 1999 Grand Final. We have very strong memories, and I suppose their salary cap cheating turned a lot of rugby league fans against them 15 years ago. So, yeah, the Panthers have been good in Western Sydney. They've been incredible for the development of their juniors. And if they win four in a row, that's the team I'm cheering for. But I think generally, Brent, if you love rugby league, you're very excited and looking forward to this game today, because they're clearly the two best teams in the comp. Over the last 5 years and longer, they've been incredibly strong, great performers. Everyone's expecting a close game. And unlike the AFL that have these lopsided grand finals, it probably will be a thriller today at the Olympic Stadium, and every rugby league fan around the world would be looking forward to the quality of this match, which should be incredible.
And may 2025 be a good year for the Dragons and the Bunnies.
Can't be any worse than what we've had the last couple, sure. Can it? You know, the Bunnies down the bottom and the Dragons not having played finals football for 6 years. So that's the good thing about sport. We live in hope.
We do, don't we? All right. Well, Souths have got a new coach. I wonder if Bennett will make much difference to Souths. Fingers
crossed.
He's an
old new coach.
Sorry?
He's an old new coach.
He is an old new coach,
before,
isn't he? Yeah, been there, done that.
To the grand final, the Panthers' first premiership win. So, yeah, I'm sure he'll do a lot better job than his predecessors.
All right, mate. Enjoy the footy tonight. Thanks for your time, as always. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
For sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham.